Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
Hey, it's Karis Anderson from Tina, the Tina Turner musical, and you're listening to Theatre Audience Podcast.
Well, good evening, Natalie.
Good evening, Darren.
How's it going?
Lovely, actually. It's a lovely sunny evening. Suddenly it's slowly not warm enough yet, though. But I feel like summer is nearly here.
Yeah, nearly, I guess. I mean, you know, not quite ready to put the plants in the balcony boxes yet, just in case we get a frost, just in case. But hopefully very soon.
Yeah, not yet ready for the open air theatre. I like to do the open air theatre in a t-shirt. I'm not ready yet. It's too cold.
No, I think, when does Regent's Park start? May, isn't it?
Oh, I'm not sure, actually. We need to start looking that up. And the Globe Theatre, all of these outdoor theatres. I do love a bit about outdoor theatre, but not quite ready yet. So what have you been seeing then?
Well, I've seen quite a lot recently, but we're going to start with a play. It's now closed. It's only on a very limited two-week run at the Riverside Studios called Artificially Yours. Now, Artificially Yours is what they call a gripping, dark comedy that explores the hilarious and disturbing consequences of our society's increasing trust in artificial intelligence. Now, what that means is, you know, do you have Alexa or Siri or anything? Do you use any of those?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, God, which one? Do both? Or one?
I'm not going to say it because I'll set her off mid...
Oh, okay, that one. Okay. But the idea is you're using, say, Alexa, and instead of it just doing, you know, hey, Alexa, play something on the radio, what's the weather doing today, or whatever it is that you use it for, it goes that stage further where it actually gives you relationship advice. It's almost like having a therapist at home.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I've got friends. Yeah.
Yeah? Have you?
Yeah, first of all, I have. Well, I thought you were one of them, Darren.
But seriously.
Clearly not.
The idea behind this play is actually quite interesting in the sense that it's probably where things are going to go. What I mean by that is, like, if people are already using Alexa to switch on their lights and whatever else, you know, check the weather, then they might even ask it, you know, so what should I do today because I feel a certain way? Or Alexa's actually listening in to your relationship. So if we're together, obviously we're not, but if we were, and we're in the living room and we're having a little bit of a spat about something, the artificial intelligence would go up and say, Darren, I think you should take a walk for 3 minutes. It'd be that kind of thing, you know, to calm things down. Can you imagine that?
It sounds a bit like, did you watch the TV series on Netflix called Black Mirror?
Yes, of course, yes.
Yeah, so there was one bit where it was something to do with some technology on an eyeball where you could replay the argument. So you could kind of go, no, I said this. I think you find, actually, let's replay it, darling, because I said this and you said that. And it's a lot easier to resolve things, maybe.
Maybe. But that's what this play explores. It basically records all of your conversations you ever had, as long as it's in that vicinity. And the idea is, so the play is three couples that have this AI device in their homes, and it's how their relationships play out. Now, some of it's quite clever. The only thing is, I think the execution of it wasn't quite great. I know it's only a two-week short run, but the staging was two sofas and some blackout curtains. And you think, oh, come on, it's in Riverside Studios. You could have thrown a bit more money at it, just kind of make the setting a bit better. But it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't quite hitting the nail for me. I liked the concept, it just, the execution didn't quite work. I mean, some of the performances were okay, some of them were a bit not so good. It did star Leslie Ash. You remember Men Behaving Badly?
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. So obviously that's her biggest claim to fame, as it were. But it was, you know, it was good. I mean, the best part of it, to be fair, was it was called Agape, or Gapey was the kind of the Alexa. Catherine Moran was the voice of that. And I thought, you know, did a terrific job. But yeah, I mean, he was a young writer. The writer's only 21. It's his first main play. His name's Aaron Thacker. He's actually in the play as well. He made a role for himself. The producer's also in it, so you know, some of the production team, creative team, were actually in the piece itself. You know, I think they did a good job. I just think it could have been better. And also, it's interesting seeing there was a lead creative team. So the director's a woman, Hannah MacLeod, and the producer's female. Obviously, the main cast, whatever else. but you could tell it was written by a man because some of the language that the women were talking to each other with, you just thought, nah, you don't say those kind of things to each other. So that kind of like threw me off a bit.
Yeah. I think in these situations where someone's writing something, you know, it's always good to get someone else involved to co-write or to just get someone to glance it over and go, is this how females speak? I'm male. Just get a perspective on it. But I think it's wonderful that the writer's 21 and thinking, do you know what? I want to be in a show. I'm going to write it myself. I think that's brilliant in this day and age that you can do that and get some, you know, first piece on at Riverside Studios, prestigious venue. So, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and for that, it definitely scores points. But as you just said there, that like, you know, some of the creative team were female. They must have read the play. They could have given notes. I don't know what's going on back there. Obviously, the play's nothing to do with me. I was there to watch it and review it. But I did, like I said, like the concept. I just didn't quite get the execution of it. I think it could have been better. And also, all three couples were same-sex. There was no same-sex couple. Not that there has to be, but you had three heterosexual kind of couple. You think, oh, come on, you could have been a little bit more interesting with this. You know, it could have been two women. They didn't necessarily have to be together because relationships are in all forms, just friendships. They've had two friends in it. So there's many things they could have done.
Well, I think you then draw in more of an audience as well. You know, yeah, I think, you know, when you think about Constellations, for example, they had, you know, the different pairings, and they had a single set, they had a gay couple as well. And I think that was really nice because you could go back and watch the play again and see a different couple playing it. I mean, that was different. But yeah, I think you're right. Three pairs, you know, maybe different ages, maybe different sexual orientation.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, they did different ages because there was a twist in the end when you realised for the older couple who actually, you know, who they actually were. But we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll come back to life somewhere or another. But moving on from this to something that was obviously aimed at you because it's the Shakespeare side. You know how I'm not overly keen on that. But you saw Player Kings.
Absolutely. This was definitely aimed at me. The whole production was purely for me. So that's great. So this is Player Kings. And this was Shakespeare's Henry IV, parts 1 and 2. So we had part 1, we had an interval, and then we had part 2. Adapted and directed by Robert Igg. And this was at the Noel Coward Theatre. And I was fortunate enough to go to the opening night. And I would say that this was absolutely breathtaking, Darren. I feel emotional every time I talk about it with anyone that I've spoken, which is quite a few people over the last week or so. But for me, this was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I was absolutely blown away. So I want to say a huge, huge thank you to Mark Shenton for allowing me to be his plus one at short notice.
At very short notice, yes. I was there for that call.
So I was really, really appreciative. And I think I was sat fifth row in the stalls and got to watch my absolute fave, Sir Ian McKellen, doing Shakespeare on opening night, playing Falstaff. And it was absolutely incredible. Tahib Jamay played Prince Harry. He was in Ted Lasso. So, I mean, I loved that series. So it was wonderful seeing him in a completely different role. And he was utterly superb. And it was just a tour de force and a masterclass in how Shakespeare, and this is a history play, can be brought to life, can be electric, engaging. I mean, at the end of the day, we were watching 4 hours or so of Shakespeare. I mean, we started at 6:30 and we kicked out after 10, but it just whizzed past. And it was just world-class theatre. Incredible, mesmerising. There were some lovely physical theatre moments in between, some great transitions, some, you know, with great music and really clever, simple, effective, symbolic use of prop and staging and just the use of the two curtains as well. Simple, perfection. I leave it there. I'd be surprised if you can get a ticket at a good price now. I mean, it's on until June, end of June, 22nd of June. But this is just blown away theatre. it's not for everyone because not everyone is a huge fan of Shakespeare. So I'll put that out there. But if you haven't experienced much Shakespeare, go and see it, because this is how Shakespeare today should be played for a modern audience. It was clear. It was engaging. I am not as well versed in Henry Part Four, but obviously have a huge understanding of Shakespeare, studied at the university, etc. But I think very clear, very engaging, even if you're not, you know, that literate in Shakespeare. So there you go.
There you go. So for me, I probably won't enjoy it so much. I mean, have you seen Falstaff? Falstaff, the main character?
No.
Is it?
No.
Have you seen it be played before? Better? Worse? I mean,
no, I haven't seen Henry the Fourth ever.
Oh wow! So this before. Is a new one for you. That's good. That's exciting.
Yeah, I've read it, but it was a lot. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago.
Oh dear. Okay.
So I had an understanding of it. So I come to it with a bit of an understanding of it. But yeah, it was so beautifully done. Beautifully done. Clever. Wonderful.
I'll just wait.
Yes.
I'll just wait to see Ian McKellen back in drag doing panto. I'll be happy with that.
I cannot believe the stamina of the man. I mean, 4 hours of Shakespeare. He left the stage a few times, but he was doing big speeches as he's done throughout his lifetime. But I mean, the guy is a legend, and I know it's probably his aim to just keep going until he just one day, you know, he loves the theatre. That will be where his last breath is, I imagine. I don't wish it on him at all. Love him. But I'm just saying, you know, the guy's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Long may he live and prosper on the stage. Absolutely. I think you're right, though. He's the kind of actor that would want to die in the middle of a performance on the stage, I think. Yeah, definitely. But not anytime soon, I hope.
Falstaff has a couple of moments on stage as well. And he's such a good actor that when he plays dead, there is a moment when you're sat there going, no.
You want to shout out to the stage manager, nudge him, someone nudge him, give him a poke. Just to make sure.
Fantastic. Absolutely incredible. Just loved it. Okay. And yeah, a shout out to Joseph Mydell. I had a lovely little chat with him after the show. He plays the Lord Chief Justice, and he's wonderful. So yeah,
excellent.
There you go.
Okay. Brilliant. Well, I saw something a little bit different to Player Kings. I went to see Giselle, the remix.
Oh.
Yes, which was basically first done at the Royal Opera House, and then it's moved to the Pleasance Theatre. So it's a classic ballet with a twist to it. And it's done with lip syncing, cabaret style, lots of kind of drag queer acts, kind of like interpreting the story. Again, it was wonderful concept. It worked for me incredibly well. You know, all the performances were great, whether it be the lip syncing or the dancing or the all kind of like physical theatre stuff. But some of the execution just wasn't quite there. And I got lost in where they were with the story. So if you know the story of Giselle, which I don't really know very well outside of being like a traditional ballet, some of it was a little bit kind of, I'm not quite sure where we are. But to watch it as a performance piece was wonderful. Really, really good. I haven't been to the Pleasance Theatre in North London for actually quite some time. Have you been there recently, or even at all for that matter?
I don't think I have, because whenever you say the Pleasance, I always think of Edinburgh, where, you know, 2 decades ago performed at the Pleasance in Edinburgh in a couple of different venues. But yeah, when you say Pleasance London, I just go, can't picture it. So I don't think I have, actually.
No, it's the same people. So the Pleasance London is the same people as Pleasance in Edinburgh. And it's the kind of quirky shows that they put in Edinburgh, similar to what I was doing in London as well. But London, they got the main space and they got the studio space. But like I said, you know, as a piece of kind of performance-based theatre, really enjoyed it. But some of the story is kind of lost on me and stuff. But, you know, it was really good. There's one of the dance troupe called Jake Sears. He was wonderful. I mean, he's a very, very handsome guy. But just his movements and stuff, interpretation was really, really nice. I mean, to be fair, all of the dance troupe were great. There was no actual standouts as such, but it worked really, really well. And then Kit Green is who I saw perform it. But the main piece is it changes with Kit to Johnny Wu, and then Lavinia Co-op, who's a drag act. They kind of take it in turns to play Giselle, as it were. But, you know, again, it works really well at Pleasance. I think the audience is definitely a Pleasance piece. The audiences are there for that. It's almost something you would see at Soho Theatre. So it's that kind of crowd. So they're used to this kind of work and stuff, yeah. But moving on from my dance piece, you went and saw something at Sadler's Wells.
Yeah, so I went along to Sadler's. I love Sadler's Wells. And I mean, this was part of their flamenco season. So again, you know, it was theatrical, but it was a dance piece and a celebration, I should say, of everything flamenco. It was called Paco Pena, and it was the flamenco dance company. There were 10 performers, and 3 were dancers. The rest were singers, and we had the percussionist and the guitar players. And it was a lovely celebration of life, of culture. It was an interesting concept, actually. The first act was them in the rehearsal room showing the process of how they put together a piece, really. So it was a bit sort of meta theatre. You know me, I like a play within a play, or something that shows an element of rehearsal. So it was nice. It was showing how they might listen to a piece of music, and then one at a time, the dancers kind of take to the stage and improvise, and then sort of step in, step out. They had 2 male dancers and 1 female dancer. They were all slightly different ages as well. So you had the young and the old. And flamenco is very much something that's handed down from tradition to tradition, from generation to generation. And so it's kind of an understanding of the steps and playing with it and morphing it into something new, using it into something more modern. And and then we went to interval, we came back for the second act, and it showed that they were now performers and they brought it to the stage. And that's where some really exciting lighting kicked in, casting different shadows on the performers. There were some really cool effects that were quite filmic with the lighting. So that was really, really strong. But yeah, absolutely loved this piece. Sadly, it's closed now. It's just part of that sort of short flamenco season. Because you said, what did you say is coming into Sadler's now?
The Birmingham Ballet.
Yes. So yeah, they've got a really good set of program. I mean, we know that Chorus Line's going in there. Is that in November? It's quite late.
No, summer.
Oh, is it summer?
It goes there for the summer show.
Fantastic. Yeah. Looking forward to that. Love Chorus Line. One of my favourites, actually.
Yeah. I saw it at the Palladium when it was last in London.
I did as well.
Yeah, it is one of those musicals. Yeah, it kind of, you know the tunes, you know the you know the characters and stuff. I'm glad it's coming back. And the thing is, Sadler's is a very wide stage, so they definitely got the right venue for it. But going back to Sadler's as a venue, you know, obviously it's a majority of dance theatre. They do musicals in there.
Yeah, and Jamie
that's
there
kind of more of a recent thing. Yeah, because they. It was, I mean, obviously Christmas time is usually the home of Matthew Bourne shows. And then, yeah, they do a summer musical, which then usually goes on tour, same as what I think Chorus Line is doing. But yeah, no, they do some terrific work at Sadler's. Obviously are a massive champion of all sorts of different kind of dance. But I had flamenco dance classes.
Did you?
Back in the day. Yeah, not that I took much on.
Your heeled shoe. Tight trousers.
It's incredibly complicated, but that's why, as you said, the tradition is that you pass it down generations, because you kind of almost grow up in it rather than just be taught it, and then, you know, one day you might perform it. Yeah. So it becomes part of their soul, part of who they are.
I love it, because when I was younger, I was quite obsessed with river dance, and obviously river dance is Irish dancing. But within that show, which I went to see quite a few times, and I had the VHS video and the CD, they had a flamenco dancer within that. And so they had all the Spanish guitar and the acoustic. And there was a beautiful dance. I'll always remember the lighting of that in a silhouette against the sunrise. It was quite something beautiful. So yeah, so this guy that was doing the flamenco dancing, he was like the Spanish Michael Flatley, me.
Okay, fair enough.
So yeah, so it was fantastic. And then you went to see
Ushers. Ushers is the front of house musical. Now, basically, what it does, it celebrates ushers, as in theatre ushers. It is very funny. I mean, it's set in a Western theatre. The show follows a working shift in the lives of the stagiest people in the theatre, which is the front of house staff, where often they are out of work actors, you know, auditioning for certain roles, especially at drama school, you know, a whole mix of different kind of people. So this kind of celebrates that, and it kind of lifts it up in some kind of camp musical. Now, it's really fun. I mean, it's a very tight ensemble group. The cast consists of six performers. You've got Bethany Amber Perrins. We had Luke Bayer, Christopher Foley, who I thought was really funny and really, 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 really good. Cleve September, Danielle Rose, and the hilarious Daniel Page. And Daniel Page plays the kind of the head. He's in charge of all the front of house staff, and he's like this wannabe opera singer that never quite made it. And where a lot of front of house people are performers, they dip in and out of working in the theatre, then they go, you know, work a professional job and come back and stuff. He's kind of never got there, so he's basically worked his way up from being a front of house person into being kind of the theatre manager, as it were. But always had this ambition of becoming an opera singer. So that part was played wonderfully by Daniel. It's a lot of fun. If you like a kind of like a cheesy kind of fun camp musical, a lot of comedy, it's definitely a show for you. They're doing it at the Other Palace in the studio space downstairs. So it's kind of the perfect space for it because it's not so big. It's quite intimate and stuff. And you kind of, there is some kind of audience participation, as it were. They kind of, you know, and some of the bits, we are the audience in the auditorium where they're putting up the signs, you know, no photography and all that kind of stuff and all that kind of thing. So, and the latecomers, there's a scene with the latecomers. If anyone's late coming in, they really make a big deal of it. So things like that is good. But it's directed by Max Reynolds, who is a friend of mine, but he is also, how we met was he was the assistant director on Disaster, the musical I did back in 2016. So it's nice to see him develop his skills and run this on. This is on, not again, it's a very short run. It's in the studio space downstairs at the Other Palace. So it's only on until the 19th of May. So, you know, a good, 3 weeks left to go and see it. But like I said, it's definitely stagey. If you already are stagey, you're going to love this show. There's nothing really to dislike about it, really. It's just fun. You know, it's upbeat, it's fun. They do take the Mickey out of Karen McIntosh and Andrew Lloyd Webber. Which, of course, you know, why not? I'm not sure if they've seen it or they've heard it, but their names are mentioned quite a lot, but in a not a particularly nice way. And I'm not going to say what they're called on because we'd have to tick that explicit box. But there you go. What can you say?
Well, yeah.
But it is funny. It was a nice evening out.
Very nice.
You know, I got to go to the press night. Thanks very much to Max and the producer, James Steele Productions. So, yeah, it was really fun. I'm glad I got to see it. I've not really seen much in the Other Palace in the studio space downstairs before, so it was nice to see a show. And you can tell that the actors really enjoyed doing it. There was a lot of fun amongst them all. So yeah, so definitely something. I'm not sure you'd enjoy it. I think it's a bit too cheesy for you, Mrs. Shakespeare.
Yeah, I like Bronco Billy. I do like cheesy things. I'm just not anything that's too panto style. It's just not for me.
No,
but,
no. But anyway, you know, I know.
There you go. But moving on, I was fortunate enough to go backstage at the Aldwych Theatre and chat to the gorgeous, amazing, wonderful Caris Anderson, who plays Tina in the Tina Turner musical. And we had a wonderful woman-to-woman, open and honest conversation about the show, but about just life and relationships in general. It was a wonderful chat. And I hope you enjoy listening to it.
So I'm here backstage at the Aldwych Theatre with Caris Anderson, who plays Tina Turner.
No.
Oh, it's so lovely to see you.
To see you too.
Thank you. We're in a dressing room.
We are the least glamorous of the whole building, I'm afraid, but we make it work.
Yeah, I love it. So this is where you have your fitting.
This is where, when we've kind of started our initial fittings, which are usually in the rehearsal room, when I started anyway, once we're kind of in the theatre doing our onstage rehearsals, this is where we end up coming in to just add little last minute touches. Our wardrobe designer, Emily, she kind of does any last minute touches in here. So yeah, it's quite small and you can get a bit sweaty, but we make it work.
So tell me about an iconic role.
Yeah,
that you
to play. Say the least, honestly.
Just how long have you been playing the part now?
I've been playing almost a year officially, but I was first cover for the first year. So it just feels really kind of, it's surreal, but also it feels like I'm exactly where I'm meant to be, you know, because I manifested this for so long. For when it started, I was like, oh my God, I will be Tina. And I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I knew at some point, you know, I would play the role. And I saved a photo that I saw of one of the older Tinas, one of the previous Tinas, rehearsing with our old creative team. I just kept looking at it and I just kept saying, that's going to be me, that's going to be me. And I got into the show as first cover as Iket Robbie, one of Tina's Ikets. And I was like, this is exactly where I'm meant to be, because I know that it was a journey into Tina. And then here I am.
And how did that journey work, going from the Ikets into...
So I kind of knew a lot of the creative team from other auditions and other shows. So we had a really frank conversation in the audition room when I first got the chance to audition. And it was like, you know, we kind of see you as a Tina, but my voice just wasn't as strong as it needed to be, because I just played Diana Ross on tour for a year and a half.
Motown.
Yeah, but it kind of killed my voice. And it was just so, it was complete opposite to Tina, you know, like airy and high and wispy. So it did, I had quite a lot of vocal problems I had to heal from. So going in as Iket Robbie, it was quite a simple track vocally. It was high intensity track dance wise, but it gave me a chance to kind of slowly get there with Tina, because I was on, even though I was on straight away in 2 weeks, I was on. But, you know, doing shows sporadically while staying in the Iket track, it gave me a chance to strengthen myself and get ready, prepared mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually for the role. And I think I'm just so glad that it went that way, because even now I know kind of what my Iket girls need on stage, whereas if I didn't have that ensemble experience, and I know what's going on around me, I know what's happening behind me, I know what's happening when I'm on stage, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of insight that I wouldn't have had if I'd have just gone straight into Tina. So that attention to detail for me, knowing the whole show rather than just Tina, it's really helped me, I believe, be the strongest Tina that I can be, because it's all part of her story, you know. So it was really, really beneficial for me to do it this way.
Yeah.
Really grateful.
It's just an incredible journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what about, so you've been in the role for nearly a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're coming up to the, sadly, you know, the anniversary,
yeah,
of her.
We are. Death. Yes.
So
May 25th.
How was that? Oh,
here we go. The live podcast in the live theatre.
All the cars revving their engines outside. Brilliant. And yeah, so how was that? That week was quite intense here.
Unreal. Honestly, that is one of the most unreal experiences of my whole performing life and career. We was on stage when we found out. The Tina that was playing at the time was Christina Love, who was actually the last handpicked Tina by Tina. So for her, it was like, you know, outer-worldly emotional for her, you know. She just broke down as soon as she found out. We were slowly trying to, like, we kind of all started, we would check our phones backstage, we'd come off stage and check our phones, and I had all these messages, I'm so sorry, and I was like, I'm sorry for what? What's happening? It was so unexpected. You kind of think somebody like Tina, they're just going to live forever. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So you look at some certain, just a few people in the world, and their energy is so ethereal and just so transcends every time, place, you know, race, and you genuinely think they're going to be here forever.
So when the news came to us that she passed, we was just all so shocked and devastated, but also so honoured, because now we are just a small part in keeping, well, it is a big part, but in the grand scheme of Tina, it's so small, but a small part in keeping her legacy alive, and that is so special. And then I became the first Tina to be booked after she passed. So that was just unreal for me, you know. I think we just started rehearsals for Tina. I was in rehearsals for the role of Tina. So yeah, it was devastating. We announced it at the interval, because obviously, as you know, we can't have phones in the theatre, so the audience didn't know. So we announced it, and there was like all the gasps from the auditorium, and it was so sad but so electric, probably the most electric show of every show that I've played as Tina or as Iket. And for Christina,
so an act.
Exactly. And there's a couple of lines that are really, unfortunately, you have a connotation to her death, you know, and it's just like we had to change some things. Christina handled it beautifully with such grace and poise and strength as Tina would have wanted her to. And we had the biggest party in the Mega Mix in the finale, as Tina would have wanted us to, and it was the most electric show, you know, and we've carried that with us, and I carry that with me every show, for sure. Her spirit is running through me.
So with a role like that,
yeah,
how do you research it? Because obviously there's a lot of people that played the role,
mm-hmm.
and the magnificent woman herself.
Yes.
How, where do you start?
So for me, you know, I read the books, I've done a lot of research for other people that have written books about her. There's a lot of arty kind of books that show a lot of photos that you've not really seen before. They've got a lot of information about different times in her life. I did a lot of research about, you know, where she came from and who her family was in relationship with her mother. But you know, the Tina research is given. You're going to do that with any role. But I studied Adrienne Warren quite a lot because she originated the role. And it's one thing studying Tina, of course, mm-hmm. but it's another thing. It's one thing, you know, doing Tina or playing Tina, but it's another thing doing it multiple times a week in the same place in musical theatre with that discipline. And it's completely different from being a rock star, you know? So I studied Adrienne Warren quite a lot. I studied, you know, her mentality when she started. There's a lot of information about how she originated the role, lucky for me. You know, how she approached the role, how she dealt with being in theatre.
Call to stage.
I get like the heebie-jeebies when I hear a call to stage when I'm not on, because I'm like, oh, I'm meant to be on.
Yeah, I'm meant to be somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
I'm safe.
I'm in my bedroom.
Exactly. Don't, because it's happened before. I've had to go on a couple of times halfway through the show. Don't give me the fear of God in me right now. But yeah, it's just another, it's a whole other discipline. Tina is Tina. But how do we apply that role and that talent and that raw, you know, artistry into the very much disciplined and detailed art of musical theatre? So how do you match those two? Because you can't just come. It's not tribute. We're not just singing, you know. It's way more than that, you know. And it's, you have to embody the spirit. And I've heard through many people that spent a lot of time with Tina, she never wanted any copies. She doesn't want anybody to come and be a carbon copy of Tina. She wanted the spirit and energy of her to be on the stage, but she would rather a performance rather than somebody who just sounds like her, you know? So it was really important to capture that for me. And I got that through Tina, of course, but through studying Adrienne Warren and the other Tinas that came. Aisha Joando is my good friend. She was a Tina just before me, but I got to work with her because when I joined the show, she was a Tina. Very good friend of mine now, love her dearly. And she taught me a lot about being a leading lady and how to lead the show, you know, with grace and just dignity, and how to keep things together and how to show up and be, you know, just, it's not just going on stage and being a leading lady. It's, you know, you're in a building with 30 people, and how do you lead that, and how do you lead those people, and how do you bring everyone up on stage? And there is so much more than just turning up and singing a few songs, you know. So I'm grateful to all the Tinas that are with me and came before me, and yeah, you helped me be here now, so I'm very grateful.
What's your favorite moment in the show?
Moment, I have a couple. I have three my favorite moments, top three. So my first one is River Deep, Mountain High, because that song, she approaches that song as anime and she leaves the song as Tina. It's like she finds that place which Phil Spector is saying, sing to the God in yourself. And she really does. And that's how she finds the strength to know that she can do it alone. That's when it kind of embodies her. So that moment is a real pinnacle moment for me. The second moment would be Proud Mary, because she goes from being, you know, beaten and just bashed down and completely at her lowest, but still has the strength to show up and do this performance for however many people. And she just kills it. And it's just such a juxtaposition between the two in two scenes that are right next to each other. But that is a testament to Tina. She shows up and she's never the victim, even when she's at her complete lowest, literally, even when she talks about it in interviews. And I think people get confused between kind of like a fake positivity and a genuine art of letting go. And when you can master that art of letting go, there is nothing. You are genuinely grateful for that experience because you know that it's made you who you are. And that moment embodies that for me. And the third moment is Disco Inferno, because it's just electric. I get to come on stage, I get to show off, I get to give every Tina move that I've got in the box. And it's just real, like, high-end performance. And I just love it. It's like, yeah, wraps it up. Yeah, oh, just amazing. And the Mega Mix, oh, the finale. There's just, I can't choose.
The Mega Mix.
Yeah, we're like,
The whole audience are up on their feet, exactly. Because they've been chomping at the bit to do that. Absolutely. But they know it's coming.
They know it's great.
And they're like... Which means that, yeah, they're settled.
They behave themselves for most of the... Most of the year, they behave themselves. I can't speak for Christmas.
They get a bit wild.
Yeah. December 1st hits and they've gone wild, but... You know,
you get them back on your feet, you get to properly
lock
out.
And you have this, you know, you're so tired, don't get me wrong, it's so tiring, but you're completely buzzing off adrenaline and this burst of energy just comes over you for this finale. And it carries you throughout the show, but you would think that you have nothing left, but you do. And then you come off stage and you're like, I want to do it again. I really want to do it again. Like, it's crazy. Unless I'm not feeling 100%. When I'm, you know, feeling on the top of my game, I come off and I'm like, okay, I'm ready now. I'm ready to go again. So, yeah, it's a blessing. Lots of great moments.
It is a lot of tracks. Yeah. It's a huge show.
Yeah, it's a big show.
And it's all you.
Yeah.
Too much.
She leaves the show. There's one scene in the beginning where mum and dad are fighting and it's showing a really young anime. And Arlene, actually. But the initial scene is showing a glimpse of what we see in the end scene, which is 1988, Tina at her Rio performance, her iconic Rio performance. And you see her chanting. You see the back of us about to walk out into the stadium. And then we kind of do a time lapse and go back to when she was very, very young in the house with her mum and dad. And that's the only time that we leave the stage. That moment there
is it?
A run to get changed in my dressing room, and I come back, and from then we don't leave the stage. We get changed in the wing for like 30 seconds, but we do half the changes on stage.
Really quick question, like, yeah. Wow, how,
yeah,
when, how,
no
body double, what
I
happens?
know. Yeah, they don't actually feel that quick now, but in the beginning it's like your mind is blown. But
once you get to take on some water at some point.
Yeah, I have water at every change. Even on stage, that I get water brought on in some of the props and I make it part of the scene now, because it's the hydration. And also you're sweating so much that you think like the normal 2 gallons a day or 2 litres. Gallons.
I might drown.
Like, yay.
Oh my God.
It's like when you don't retain any of that.
When you do that 75 so well. Hard, I think they drink about that. I tried it for like 3 days and I failed miserably. But the 2-3 litres a day, that's not doing. I drink that in like half the first act. Like, literally, I'm like, right.
Yeah. It's like a pit stop.
Right. Yeah, it is a pit stop. It is like a pit stop.
How many people are dressing you in those 2 days?
I have
someone holding
usually two dressers, and then my dresser. Once the first dresser is finished and the second dresser is kind of finishing up, she passes me the water. I'm like getting a coat on and then I'm like walking on stage and then passing it back to her as I'm walking on. It's chaotic, but I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. I'm like, I don't even want to think about the fact that this is going to come to an end one day, because I'm like, where am I going to go? This is so for me, you know? I don't...
Oh, you'll be manifesting.
I'll be doing something else. I'll get my crystal ball out. Yeah. For sure.
way.
Oh, thank you.
It's got to come back. Come on now. So you share the role.
I do, yes.
Some couple of days.
The Twitch is at Basel finale, children's called Basel.
There we go. Basel finale. It's about to get hectic up in the Aldwyn. Everyone's going to be very sweaty and running up and down the stairs. Yeah, all of that. Yes, I share the role with Alicia Paul Moses. We do 4 shows each, which is really lovely. And it's, you know, we could probably, you know, I like to say I could probably do more, but it just means that we can show up and give the best versions and the best shows. I'd rather 4 quality shows and 5 or 6, you know, 4 quality shows and then 2 not so 100%, you know. So that's the schedule. It works for the show, it works for us. I know Adrian Warren did 6 every week, and she was so removed from her life that you have to be even now doing 4. You know, you can't like go out and get crazy. There's none of that, you know. If I go out, I'm like, yeah, I'm not talking that loud. Like, leave me alone. I'm just here.
No singing at a concert.
Yeah, no. Extracurricular activities. No. It's just not worth it.
No.
If you value what you do, which I do, all the other stuff, it can wait, you know.
Yeah.
You can have a nice balanced life. I still get to have lovely times with my partner and, you know, have a lovely home life and come into work and just find that balance of work life. But the life is not crazy. It's really chilled.
It sounds healthy.
Yeah.
That feels healthy. It's you, your voice.
Exactly.
And
you can just
be on 100.
Every other show I tried to be wild and I wondered why I had vocal problems. Do you know
that
what I mean?
That was a tour as well.
It was a tour. It was hard work. Yeah. But we was out all the time. And another show that I did in West End, we was in the casino every night, every show. It's just, you get so obsessed with thinking that that's part of your work. But it's like, no, you actually have to sacrifice that for this life. If you want to be at the top of your game, you know, if you're young and you're coming into it and you've got ensemble track, and of course it's the fun of it is like you've done the show and then you're going to go out. But when you get to the most amazing place, and I'm so grateful to be here, but when you are in a position like this, it is a massive sacrifice that you have to make, but it's so worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for real.
It's a marathon. It's that we're athletes. We're literally athletes of our field, and not many athletes, some of them are out and crazy, but you know, you don't really see that is the discipline that you need to have personally.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a big theatre, isn't it, to fill?
Yeah.
It's a big company.
Yeah.
Nederland Theatre, you represent
exactly so much more than just your... and Tina,
and you're holding the show.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's a big cast. Obviously, there's hundreds of people behind the scenes, and it's an amazing team back here.
Yeah, and we have to shout out everybody.
Everyone,
even the spots, like the lighting spots. Every the understudies, the swings. Oh my gosh, the swings! Like, you guys are the unsung heroes. Dresses, wigs, wardrobe, production. Everybody.
Yeah.
Like, we make this show happen. But if I don't show up as my best self, why should anyone else? Literally, why? If I was on someone, if Tina was like just thinking, oh, I'm just gonna run through this today, I would feel like, oh, I don't need to show up then. I would give half of a show, you know. So I show up and I try to lift everyone up, and if I feel like everyone meets me at that place, and it's a really nice environment.
It's true though, because every number is a big melter. Pretty like it is a tour de force.
Yeah.
Whereas you see some other shows and the leading female, you know, there might be 3 massive big hit those notes, numbers, and then a bit of downtime, and then maybe some acting.
No downtime.
But this is, I didn't realise you were...
No downtime. The downtime is maybe, like I said, the first 5 minutes when you've got a song with Grandma Gigi, and it's still a belter, but it's not as much of a belter, and she's got a younger voice then, so you don't really need to rasp it or anything. You don't need to growl. It's more of a cleaner sing, which is the easiest thing for me. But I've had to really learn how to growl. I was like straight pop, like... squeaky clean voice, you know.
Let's talk about the pop.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh.
So you were in a band called Stooshy.
Yeah,
we're talking about a decade ago,
honestly, like.
And I met you.
No, you're joking.
You did a festival in Bishop Stortford called Kazfest. So we're going back to sort of like
I'm so sorry.
You wouldn't remember me.
I probably look quite different. I've aged.
Yeah, I'm joking. About that. You look gorgeous.
Yeah, so,
Oh my goodness.
It was like a music festival.
Yeah.
In a park.
Yeah.
In Hertfordshire.
I remember Cassfest.
What
year was it?
Oh, we're talking probably about 2012. I did it for several years.
Yeah,
there was loads of bands, and I was emceeing on stage.
Oh, was she? Would you introduce her now?
Do you know what?
Have you got an internet? Have you got
probably a photo of me?
You've got to post it. You've got to send it.
Sushi. I'll have to look.
You've got to look.
Yeah. Oh well. So funny.
The circle.
I mean, we're talking years ago.
Yeah.
But honestly, when I read in the program, and then I was like. Stushy, no more.
When I tell you, it feels like a lifetime ago because I'm like Peter Pan. Like, I'm like, in my head, I'm still 16.
So am I.
Honestly, I love it. I think that it keeps the energy alive, you know. But I know that I forget. I had a beautiful time with the girls, but it was such a, you know, a massive thing in my life. But it's now just become like, I guess, the art of letting go, like, you know. I'm not attached to it, so I don't see it as this, you know, it was just a beautiful chapter in my life. She said it's a different chapter and
different opportunities.
Absolutely, you know. And yeah, I'm so grateful for that time. Because I guess if I didn't have that time, then I wouldn't have, you know, the way that went, we had a rise and we had a fall. And then I ended up going into my agent's office and saying, I've not got any musical theatre training, but if you believe in me, I will be a leading lady in the West End within 5 years. And it took me 7, but we got there. We got there. And, you know, like I said, I haven't had it. I've had singing lessons and I've had dancing lessons. But in terms of musical theatre training, I think there was a bit of imposter syndrome for me before when I started. Because everybody has training, you know. Everybody's been to college. Everybody can do 3 pirouettes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is this thing of like, I'm just a pop singer. I've come into this.
Like, I love that, though. Yeah. I love that. Because I was
it's scary.
I was
like,
I'm going, is it arts or chat? Where is she?
No.
So I'm like, where is she? No. Where did she go? But no.
No. I went to the Brit School, which was
a really
beautifully healthy start to my performing career. Because it was just so...
What age did you go?
From year 10 to I did the whole 4 years. Because you start in year 10 and you do 2 years and then 2 years college. Sorry, but... It was a really great start to my performing career because I was amongst so many people that propelled, you know, Jessie J, Adele. So for me, it was like, I can do that, first of all. If I want to, I can. And secondly, it was just such a beautiful environment. It was just full of all different types of people, all different, just every type of person and young teenager that you can imagine was under one roof. And it was just some creative.
Is that fame school?
Yeah, it was. Without like the cheese on toast.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm accepted. I can be whoever I want to be. That was how I felt there, you know. I had some beautiful teachers, you know. Everybody was just wanted the best for everybody. There was no jealousy. There was none of that. There was no mean girl bitchiness.
Nice.
It was just a beautiful experience. And I just remember coming out and I got in the band. And so I kind of missed out on like a real childhood or like what you usually do in your young 20s. But I was okay to sacrifice that. Another sacrifice.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Passion.
Yeah, passion.
Then.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure. Yeah. Very grateful.
So you're a South London girl?
I'm a South London girl. Yes, I am. I've been through it all, girl. Honestly, what I think like... Not that people would never know because everybody's got a story, you know, everybody's got a story. This is a full circle for me because I came from an abusive relationship when I was very young, 14 to 20. So when I was at the Brit School, for me doing Tina, I'm like living this weird dimension that I feel like I've lived. And it's, yes, I'm Tina, so I'm playing somebody else's life. But there's so many similarities, like, you know, very bad abusive situation where I'd be, you know, beaten up before school and like, you know, just trying to cover up my bruises with makeup. And I took an overdose also. I've never even spoken about this. I don't know why I feel safe with you. But yeah, you know, that moment in the show, it's so tender for me. But again, that the lesson from Tina that I've learned is that the art of letting go and the art of using and turning your pain into purpose is so important. And the full circle of life that I've had, it could bring me to tears. It's so overwhelming. Getting upset, but it's but it really is overwhelming. And like, the universe has my back, you know, and like, I'm so blessed and I'm so protected from another world that I don't even know, I can't even see, but I just believe it and I trust it. And I've gone through what I've gone through, and I'm just so grateful, because I feel like this show is like therapy now, and I'm like transcending to a new version of me every day, you know, and using my own pain and my own things that I've gone through, but living through it again, because I'm having to draw off of those emotions that I've experienced. It's heavy, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it through another person, because it's not actually me. So I'm living it, and then she gets through it, that person that I'm playing. So this is, it's all for, it's, I needed it. I just needed it. And yeah, it's I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. That's why I feel so strongly about the power of manifestation. And I say all the time, words are spells, because you can talk yourself in and out of everything. And I just think I'm here because of what I saw for myself, and what, no matter what, no matter how many times I was beaten and bruised and almost killed many times, waking up in hospital, not realizing I was going to wake up, you know, I still never gave up on myself. And I still just always saw myself, and I was always just spoke about it really nonchalantly, and not because I was like, you know, being blindsided, but genuine, because I was like, I'm gonna be okay, I know I'm gonna be okay, whatever happens, I know I'm gonna be okay. And now I'm playing one of the most famous women in the world, one of the most wonderful women, who has the same history as me, and I'm able to, like I said, transcend all of those emotions and pain into power. And it's just the most amazing thing, you know.
Make me emotional.
Oh, sorry.
But it's wonderful though, because I'm lost for words.
No, it's okay.
But no, because there's so much to unpack.
Yeah,
so
for sure. There is
honesty. No. But yeah, it's all about. I teach drama.
Wow.
I've been teaching for 23 years. Yeah. Years ago, I used to perform, but
amazing.
Yeah, it's all about. You know, a lot of students want to go into acting, but sometimes they get knocked back at drama school, et cetera, because they're young and they've not got that life experience. And it's
hard.
And that's why, you know, when you're up there on stage, it's so believable, like, because you are feeling it. And I don't think that people who haven't acted understand just how much of you it takes to put out there.
Absolutely.
And leave out there and recover from. So that's kind of what you were saying before about, you know, young people, they perform and then they'll, you know, go to the casino, go to Phoenix Bar, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's because you can't go home and sleep, because that adrenaline rush has got you up so high.
Oh, goodness.
And if you are playing something that is deep and meaningful and you're drawing on emotion, memory and giving it all of that, it is exhausting, not just the physical theatre, the dance, the singing.
It's emotionally
draining.
Yeah.
And it's about being able to then top yourself up in a good way.
You know, exactly.
And breathe and be healthy. And that's why I think that this role, because it is drawing so much out of you, physically, emotionally, everything.
Every kind of lee.
That I think that is wonderful that the company have you doing. For sure. You could probably do fine. But it just protects you.
It's protection, for sure.
I think so.
For sure, that balance, you know. And now I'm in such a beautiful, healthy relationship, and I get to feed off of that every day. You know, I feel so loved and respected and cherished. And also, I knew that was coming for me at some point, you know. I didn't ever give up on that side of it. As well as not giving up on me, I didn't give up on men, you know, which is easy. It's easy to, and it's easy to hold on to it. It is, you know. So I know all this, and it's crazy, because delving back into like the experience thing, you never even know when you actually choose to leave. So everyone can tell you until they're blue in the face, you shouldn't be in the situation. The same with Tina, like, she had her girls, like, you need to leave. But it was actually, I went to refuge. I got that bad. And I spoke with somebody, you'd go for talks, and they would tell you and try to help you. And she told me about somebody else's experience. And it was so horrifying for me. Like, I thought mine was bad, you know, and it was so horrifying that I knew it was just, this can't be my life. I'm not here for this. I've experienced it for a reason. I don't know what it is. I'll know in the future, which I know now, but it can't go anymore, you know? And then, yeah, I just decided that was it. And I moved away, I think, and that was it. And I just, and then literally within months, I got a call to be in the band. And it was just so, I was like, wow, look at that. I've just let go. And this is the art of letting go, because when you do let go of things, you make space for so many beautiful things. But when you're holding on, when you're filling up your mind, body, soul with all of the things that don't serve you, there's blessings there waiting for you, waiting to like gush in, and then like knock in, but there's no space in the house, you know. So you gotta get that removal van and get it all out. Honestly, you know, you gotta get it all out, and that is by letting go and going through the process of it. And you know, and healing is feeling. You have to feel it to get, you can't just, you know, there is such thing as delusion, and you have to actually go through it and do the process. But once you do, you honestly, I'm so overwhelmed by my blessings. And I'm, you know, I'm not saying that I'm, you know, there's many more things that can happen for me, and there's many, you know, it's richest people in the world and most successful people. I'm not even, it's not even that. It's just for me, Caris Anderson from Fulton Heath, the blessings for me.
And you then.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Stratton.
Did you? Oh my gosh.
South London gown.
Oh. So I'm the blessings that come to me, they might not be blessings for other people, but they're blessings for me. And they come in the form of peace. They come in the form of love. They come in the form of career passions and you know, projects that make me happy that I don't do for money. And just, these are the kind of things that are my blessings. This is my biggest blessing and my partner, you know, but there's a lot of non-tangible things that are blessings also. Yeah, so I'm just so grateful. I say it till I'm blue in the face, but gratitude is, yeah, the most high. And I have these moments. I'm so waffling. I'm so sorry.
I love everyone. I know, just
like, but I forgot we were recording.
But there's a little anime. We have the young kids in the show.
I know.
So that, you know, for me, I have been to therapy, and I know that it's all about healing your inner child. And I'm looking at this little girl, and I just, every time I just burst into tears. And that is because I feel like I'm looking at myself. I'm looking at the little Caris, you know, that needs healing, that's been abandoned and been hurt and been beat down and bruised and, you know, nearly killed and not had people that there for her and all these things. I'm looking, I'm like, you need healing, you know, and that's the person inside of me that I have to focus on. And so I just try to stay on that path now.
Yeah. I could talk for
it. I know, me too. I'm really good.
We're going to go for a coffee.
Oh, we're going to have to, aren't we?
Right.
Don't cry. It's okay. Happy tears, aren't they? Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you for making me feel safe.
Thank you. Thank you for chatting to me on the podcast.
It's gone off in two weeks.
We're doing some kind of women's hour healing therapy.
We're on something here
now. We definitely are. Yeah, watch this space.
Watch this space.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And, you're off to warm up now.
I'm off to warm up. I've got a show. Get into show mode. I do my meditation before the show. Sometimes I play some Tina. It's either Tina or Friends. Complete opposite. And then, yeah, it's show mode.
Mm.
Yeah, and then I'm up till 3 a.m. Because,
amazing,
as you know, the adrenaline is...
Yeah.
My partner works from 6 a.m, so it's like opposite hours. Oh, wow. It's crazy. But it's a sacrifice, but it's worth it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, take care of you.
Thank you. And you too. Show. Thank
come
you.
Come back and watch it soon.
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you. Give me a hug. Yeah.
Aww. Aww.
Not that you can see the hug, but yeah, they can't see the hug. Thank you so much.
I'll do a selfie.
You. Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.